inviting me to come talk today. For those of you who are in the previous session and heard Dr. Golden, as you know, the eradication of syphilis is not imminent, so this session is definitely relevant to our practice. And what I wanted to focus on is really ocular syphilis as a manifestation. We know that syphilis is not really going away, but what about ocular syphilis and the recent emergence of this as a clinically significant disease? So I wanted to review some epidemiology and what we know about the epidemiology. I think there's some caveats there, as well as review the clinical presentation, diagnosis, and treatment of ocular syphilis. I wanted to discuss some recent findings about molecular typing of T. pallidum and whether there are oculotropic strains of syphilis, and then general public health messages. So this really came about, I think, the concern of this increase in ocular syphilis. And actually, I believe it was Christmas Eve, exactly, of 2014, when one of our fellows at the University of Washington HIV clinic saw two patients on the same day who had been out of care, who presented with one with blindness and one with a significantly diminished vision. And both were admitted and diagnosed subsequently with ocular syphilis. They were both partners, and then after that finding, there were two other cases that were noted within that same few-week period. And the question of whether there's something more significant going on in the community and Seattle and King County, and then potentially more nationally as well. As I mentioned, two of those that came in on that Christmas Eve were HIV positive, and subsequently another one was found that was HIV positive, all MSM, generally low CD4 counts, and most not on antiretrovirals. Shortly thereafter, in San Francisco, there were also reported 8 additional cases of ocular syphilis that were identified by the San Francisco Health Department. 6 of those 8 were MSM, and 7 were HIV positive, 6 MSM and 1 female commercial sex worker. Again, only 2 of those were on antiretroviral therapy, and the median CD4 count was close to 300. So based on this, an MMWR report was put out on this cluster of ocular syphilis cases to really heighten physician provider awareness about ocular syphilis, which is previously not really been thought about when people present with syphilis in general. Since that report, over 200 cases have been identified of ocular syphilis in the past 2 years from across 20 different states. And this is from updated data from March of 2016 from the CDC. Most cases, so that's greater than 90%, are in HIV positive MSM. But there are a few that are in heterosexual men and women, so not exclusively a disease amongst HIV-positive MSM, although the majority are in that group. So why are we seeing more cases of ocular syphilis now, or are we even? Is this just a matter of heightened awareness about something that's existed for a really long time, or is there a new strain of T. pallidum that may have a higher affinity for the eye? And then, obviously, how do we prevent more cases from happening? So as we know, syphilis is really old. But how common is ocular syphilis? And this is historical data. Pre-HIV era from Hopkins, this data showed that in early secondary syphilis, about 4.5% of patients were identified with ocular involvement. I will say that the case reporting here is based on symptoms and not necessarily validated through ophthalmologic exam. Recurrent secondary, 29 out of 309, so 9.3%, and in late syphilis, around 3%. More recent study in the multi-center study of neurosyphilis showed about 12% ocular syphilis rates and 9% in another study. This is all prior to the MMWR report that came out. So usually, ocular syphilis is a clinical manifestation of neurosyphilis, but I will make the point that you don't have to have abnormal CSF findings. So the absence of pleocytosis in the CSF or a negative VDRL shouldn't rule out ocular syphilis if someone has clinical manifestations of ocular syphilis. And it can occur at any stage, including primary, secondary, as well as late disease. And left untreated can cause permanent blindness, like I mentioned in the gentleman that came in late 2014 to our clinic, who is permanently blind. So the case definitions of ocular syphilis, a person with syphilis of any stage plus signs and symptoms consistent with ocular syphilis. I love how there are some circular definitions because, so the uveitis, panuveitis are the most common findings on ophthalmologic exam. Decreased visual acuity, blindness are some symptoms, optic neuropathy, keratitis, vasculitis. Often people can present with eye pain or painless decreased visual acuity. Floaters is another common symptom, as well as photophobia, eye pressure, flashing light. So really, any eye symptoms in conjunction with a syphilis diagnosis should prompt further evaluation and potential treatment. So, as all of you are probably very familiar with the anatomy of the eye, as I am, that would be no. This is why we have our ophthalmology colleagues. This is the complicated picture of the anatomy of the eye. But what I wanted to highlight is that syphilis can affect multiple areas in the eye, but the most common findings are really uveitis, either anterior uveitis, which is iritis, or posterior uveitis, or panuveitis, which just affects the whole area. But you can also see retinitis, vasculitis, keratitis. I will reserve that mostly for congenital syphilis. And then you can see optic nerve involvement as well, particularly in late syphilis findings. So these are some dramatic pictures that are courtesy of Thuy Doan, a former ophthalmology colleague of mine who was involved in the early case reports of syphilis in King County and was one of our colleagues in identifying all these patients and seeing them in a very timely manner. So here is a picture that basically shows this fibrin deposition of the uvea and this iritis that can be seen. It's an angle view of the lens. And this is what you can see on gross exam as well. And this is also consistent with iritis, uveitis. So in terms of the clinical description, there are three main large studies that showed that the majority of patients, like I mentioned, do present with a uveitis, posterior uveitis as the primary site of infection, often with bilateral findings in the eye. Symptoms are generally over a month by the time that people present, and obviously an RPR that is positive. About 10% of patients will experience permanent vision impairment. The diagnosis can be made on ocular symptoms plus serologic evidence, and then a prompt ophthalmologic exam consistent with syphilis or evidence of syphilis infection in ocular fluid. Often that's not done, as that sampling is sometimes difficult to obtain in a timely manner because you don't want to delay treatment. A possible or presumed case of syphilis is ocular symptoms plus evidence of syphilis, serologic evidence of syphilis. So many of the cases that we hear about are possible or presumed cases rather than confirmed cases. So whom should we consider ocular syphilis? In anybody at risk for syphilis. So that would be MSM, anybody who's HIV positive, any person who has multiple or anonymous sex partners, patients on PrEP, as we know that there's increased STIs among that population. So Matt Golden actually brought this up in the pre-miss mini plenary for those of you who were there, which really showed the importance of identifying patients who may have neurologic, otologic, or ophthalmologic syphilis by doing some basic screening on anyone at risk or recently diagnosed with syphilis by simply asking them if there's any hearing problems or any hearing changes, any visual changes, any headaches, and not getting at specifically ophthalmologic syphilis with the headaches, but neurosyphilis, because these are patients that you would want to treat differently and manage differently. So management of ocular syphilis, really a prompt referral to ophthalmology if that is available to you, and preferably within 24 hours is ideal. Performing a lumbar puncture to look for neurosyphilis. Admission is sometimes necessary in the cases that we saw at University of Washington where they were so profoundly visually impaired, they were admitted for therapy. And if an LP is performed pre-treatment, do consider repeat LP to demonstrate resolution of that pleocytosis, those inflammatory markers, as well as VDRL. Treatment of ocular syphilis is treated like neurosyphilis with aqueous penicillin, and you can either do that IV, or you can also give procaine penicillin, IM, plus probenecid, not benzathine, and so that's really important to note that that would not treat ocular syphilis or neurosyphilis. So treatment controversies, and essentially, since many of these patients are HIV positive, the concern was whether there would be a immune reconstitution inflammatory process with a concomitant initiation of antiretroviral therapy. And really, we don't necessarily see that, and the benefits of starting antiretroviral therapy on patients who have very low CD4 counts is obvious, and so we wouldn't necessarily delay that, and we would continue to treat the ocular syphilis as well. There have been case reports of Jarrett-Schirmer reaction, so a transient worsening and potential febrile reaction after treatment, but that should also just be monitored for, and that would not change our therapy. Those are some posters from King County. The other new thing that I did want to focus on is ocular tropism and strain typing, and this was just published in their colleagues from the University of Washington, Sheila Lukart and Christina Mara, and the lead author here, Sarah Oliver. Actually, at the onset of that outbreak in late 2014 and early 2015, they worked in conjunction with public health and both Washington State and San Francisco to obtain specimens from those early case reports of ocular syphilis to identify whether it was just an increase in case reporting or whether was there actually maybe a strain that was more oculotropic that was leading to increased cases of ocular syphilis. So a number of patients were identified. 18 patients were able to successfully have molecular typing done who had ocular syphilis, and they were compared with 45 patients who had syphilis but non-ocular, non-neurologic syphilis. And clinical information was able to be obtained on 14 of 18 of those patients. Again, they were mostly male MSM HIV positive with early syphilis. Most had panuveitis, and then the rest had retinitis or chorioretinitis. The most common type identified in both sets of patients, so ocular and non-ocular patients, was 14DG, which is the most common strain worldwide. There was no clear evidence of a single oculotropic strain identified, but the authors do comment, I see Sheila Lukart here in the background, that the 8DG strain, which is an uncommon strain to be seen in the Northwest and in the U.S. in general, was identified in two separate patients who are not sexually linked, and the partner of one of those patients wasn't able to be typed, so presumably also had 8DG. So potentially three patients with this strain. There's not enough data to suggest that this is definitively an oculotropic strain, but it is unusual that this strain was identified and had not been previously reported as widely prevalent in the area. So just as a showing of these are the patients with ocular syphilis and their molecular typing here, as you can see here. So the CDC actually in their updated recommendations for and guidance for ocular syphilis does actually recommend that you get pre-antibiotic clinical samples, if possible, to be saved and stored in minus 80 for potentially doing molecular typing if there were a concern for ocular syphilis and an outbreak. So just some conclusions and public health messages. As we know, syphilis is still on the rise, particularly among MSM and HIV-positive individuals. Ocular syphilis is still a concern, and the issue with determining incidence and prevalence is that the case reporting is very challenging, and that's the role of our clinicians and epidemiologists to really try to identify this disease. I think there's underreporting and overreporting of this disease, so the numbers are really hard to obtain. Not everyone with ocular symptoms with a diagnosis of syphilis necessarily has ocular syphilis, and not everybody who has syphilis is necessarily going to be screened and identify those ocular symptoms. So that's why the underreporting and overreporting. So, and it does have a very varied clinical presentation, so please consider it or else it'll be missed. And ask about auditory and ocular symptoms of every person who's diagnosed with syphilis. And if you can obtain a prompt ophthalmologic evaluation, it is definitely ideal either to be able to obtain samples or to confirm your syphilis, ocular syphilis diagnosis. Treatment is the same for neurosyphilis and ocular syphilis. And the jury's still out on oculotropic strains, but they may exist. And I think it is shows the importance of further molecular typing work that may show that there is clearly evidence in the future. Thank you.